You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
During Walking Baseball Encyclopedia, Paul Francis Sylvan, please call him Sully, every day on Locked On MLB for a unique look at the majors, both present and past. Subscribe to Locked On MLB today on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Yo, 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 Dodger fans, welcome to Locked On Dodgers. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This is a daily podcast covering the World Series champion Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I'm Vince Samperio, Chavezarine Fiend, here with Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential. Jeff, the Dodgers had two chances to gain ground on the Giants this weekend and didn't do it either time.
Yeah, it was a bummer of a weekend, losing 2 out of 3 to the Rockies, a team that they should beat, especially because the Rockies are really bad on the road. But all things considered, I guess it's better to do that when the Giants also lost 2 out of 3.
In your head, if you project it like, oh, Dodgers swept and Giants swept, I guess you can make yourself feel a little better that way. We're going to get into a couple decisions from over the weekend, a couple other things with the Dodgers in general, and then touch a little bit on the Mets and the situation that happened over there. But before all that, a quick reminder to subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcasts. When you get in your car or if you're at home, tell your smart device to play podcasts Locked On Dodgers. Real quick talk. So Dodgers lost 2 out of 3. The Giants also lost 2 out of 3. So they ended up the same where they were before the series started. But does that really make you feel any better?
Only when I think about the fact that if the Giants had won 2 out of 3, the Dodgers would have lost a game this weekend. You know, like, yeah, it's a bummer, and hopefully the Dodgers got their bad play out of the way and it was, they're ready to take it to the Braves. But yeah, for me, the worst part of it is losing 2 out of 3 against the Rockies when a much better team is coming into town. So it's more kind of worry about the future than actually being upset about the weekend, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where the season's getting shorter every day, and this was a Rockies team that is ridiculously bad on the road. The Dodgers' offense has been very hit or miss the last few weeks, but they've been able to overcome that and win games. They weren't able to do that this weekend. They got shut out on Sunday. They put up two home runs on Friday. They were able to get more runs on Saturday and win that game. But, yeah, it's just an annoying weekend overall. And now they got the Braves coming into town. The Giants head over to play the Brewers. All first-place teams and the first wild card all playing against each other. And then the Dodgers head into San Francisco. So it's just going to be a matter of the Dodgers are sending their three, Julio, Buehler, and Scherzer, up against the Braves. So they do have a chance to take this series. But getting back to just over the weekend, there's a couple things that happened, and we'll start off in Sunday's game. In the first inning, Mitch White gets the start, and there's two on, second and third, two outs. CJ Cron comes to the plate. He ends up hitting a 3-run home run, but I know there's some chatter and some thought that maybe the Dodgers should have intentionally walked him right there.
Yeah, I had a few people bringing that up with me on Twitter. Personally, I can't think of any situation I'd be on board with a first inning intentional walk. Yeah, I guess if you're just trying to get a pitcher through the inning and it's the 8 hitter up or something, and so you're just intentionally walking a guy to get to the pitcher. Yeah, CJ Cron is definitely a better hitter than Rio Ruiz right now. Rio Ruiz is a hard name to say. For me, the issue was throwing him a fastball down the middle. I would have been totally fine with Mitch White pitching him carefully. You know, try to get him to chase. It worked later for Bruce Dogger Adderall. He got Cron to chase. You know, when he went 2-0 on Cron, he should have stuck to that approach. See if he can get him to chase, knowing worst case scenario is you walk him and load the bases for a pretty bad hitter. I feel like intentionally walking a guy, I can't get my brain to accept that as a good strategy. I think you got to trust your pitchers to not throw fastballs down the middle to the guy who probably going to win the National League Player of the Month for August, who's hitting home runs left and right. Don't throw that pitch to him. And, you know, bad pitches happen. But, yeah, I think you're waving the white flag way too early. At that point in the game, there was no reason to think the Dodgers weren't going to score at least a few runs. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Cron's going to home run there. I think Mitch White probably gets CJ Cron out. 75% of the time in that situation. And, you know, the other 25%, it's mostly an RBI single or something. You know, the fact that he had a home run, I understood it. Like, even when he came up, like, well, first base is open. But for me, that was more an argument to pitch him carefully than to put him on purpose.
Yeah, I don't think putting him on right away was the right move. But once you're down 2-0, like I said, just don't give him anything to hit. He's the one, not the only guy, but he's the main guy in that lineup that has the best chance of beating you right now. And with two runners in scoring position, so a single brings in two runs, you're down early. Obviously, you're counting on your offense to score. And the Dodgers, regardless of how bad their offense is slumping, Dave Roberts and, you know, everyone else in that dugout is going to believe that they're going to score more than a couple runs, especially against a guy that struggled against the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium specifically. But it just didn't work out. But once he went up 2-0, they shouldn't have gave him any fastball near the plate. That's where it hurt him. But also, the Dodgers didn't score any runs, so it didn't matter what they would have done. If the Rockies would have just scored one run the rest of the game, then they would have won the game anyways.
Yeah, and White had just got Trevor Story out. And Trevor Story, despite the numbers right now, is a better hitter than CJ Cron. You know, yeah, he had, I think both hits by Blackman and Rogers were both on hanging breaking balls. And so maybe that's why White was afraid to throw a breaking ball to Cron. But you pitch him carefully, but there was no reason to think that he couldn't get Cron out. And I think most of the time he would have.
The other thing that came from Sunday, similar in the waving the white flag territory, was Justin Turner pitched the ninth inning in a 5-0 game. So was still within earshot. The Dodgers had put runners on the last two innings, didn't score. And the Dodgers went to save their bullpen and threw Justin Turner. He ended up throwing a score this inning, so it worked out. But I did see some people upset that maybe Dave Roberts was giving up a little too early.
Yeah, and I get that approach, but I get that opinion, but I didn't mind it at all. Steiner and Monday, we're talking a lot about the effects of all these bullpen games. I know that Vasse talked about all these bullpen games and everything, but the fact is Saturday and Sunday weren't supposed to be bullpen games. Mitch White and David Price are starting pitchers. Mitch White's last time out, he pitched over seven innings. There was no reason to think that they were only going to get 3 1/3 innings from Mitch White. No reason to think they were only going to get 4 from David Price. They should have gotten 5 or 6 from Price and 5 or 6 from White. And that's the problem, you know. So the bullpen games have been an issue, but really the issue is you have two guys who you're counting on to be starters who didn't pitch like starters on back-to-back days. You know, in the end, the Dodgers needed to rest their bullpen, and after they used Kenley in the eighth, you know, they did have Vasilla warming up when they were thinking about threatening in the bottom of the eighth, but then once they didn't score, I think it was the right call because, like Dave Roberts said, it seemed unlikely that we were going to win this game based on how we were hitting that day. And, you know, and the fact is Justin Turner came in and pitched a scoreless inning. So that happens sometimes too with position players pitching. But yeah, it was a white flag, and I think it was a warranted white flag.
I don't think this is why Dave Roberts did it. One of those things where it's like, hey, you know what, guys? You had all these chances to score. We didn't score. And now I don't have, like, not directly, like, I don't have the faith in you guys to score, but I don't think it's worth it to waste another bullpen arm because you guys clearly aren't, you know, hitting, haven't hit over the weekend. And I don't think that's what Roberts did, but in my mind, I'd be like, you know what, Dave Roberts, that's a good move. The offense isn't doing it. It's maybe a little bit of a slap in the face or maybe a little bit slight disrespect. Like, you know what, guys, I don't think you guys were going to put up runs, and I'd rather save an arm than go with the chance that we might score.
You know what I was hoping for, though? In the bottom of the eighth inning, when the Dodgers, they had two runners on, and Pollock at the plate, it looked like the Dodgers might load the bases for Corey Seager. And did you know Corey Seager has 2 career grand slams, at least in the regular season. I don't remember if he's hitting in the postseason. But his 2 career grand slams both came on Sunday afternoons, and both came in games started by Hyunjin Ryu. And Mitch White is the closest thing the Dodgers currently have to Hyunjin Ryu from a ethnic perspective. So I thought it would have been fun if Corey Seager come with bases loaded and got his 3rd career grand slam, all coming on Sunday afternoons when in games that a Korean pitcher had started for the Dodgers.
I didn't have faith in that happening, but it would have been good if that did happen.
Yeah, I it was more hope than anything else, because Sunday did not seem like the day that was going to happen.
All right, we're going to come back and talk about Kenley Jansen, a couple other things from the weekend, so make sure to keep it locked on Dodgers. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again, and the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion, and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. All right, Jeff. So another thing from the weekend, or from Sunday specifically, was the Dodgers using Kenley Jansen on back-to-back days in that eighth inning of the 5-0 game. And I don't know. I saw a lot of flack on it. I didn't have a big concern about it. But did you have any, like, a big concern about that?
No. I mean, the fact is, like we were talking about, the Dodgers, they were kind of in – The same reason they had Justin Turner pitch the ninth is why they had Kenley pitch the eighth, because he was basically their most rested available reliever. And in a way, I was, you know, I was pleased to see that Dave Roberts was willing to go to him in that situation. All things considered, just, you know, anything that removes Kenley from the strict, it's a safe situation, so Kenley's going to pitch kind of role, I think is a good thing. And, you know, you didn't want to wave the white flag quite yet because there's still two innings left of offense. So go with Kenley. He had a good inning. He looked really good. And, yeah, I didn't have any issue at all with that decision.
Yeah, me neither. Like I said, the Dodgers, they had been threatening in the last couple innings. It seemed like they might break through at some point. You don't want to wave the white flag too early, like you said. And the fact of the matter is, you know, they have Blake Treinen, who can be the closer for you if you need, and he would have been on with the day rest. So if they need him on Monday, he'll be fine, and that's just really the way it goes. But the other part about Jansen is, I believe you said that they talked about it on the radio broadcast. I saw a tweet that I think Jerry Hairston talked about it in either the pregame or postgame, and it's Kenley Jansen as a Hall of Famer, and I think Hairston said he is a Hall of Famer. I think you said that Steiner and whoever was on that said that he's a Hall of Famer, but I don't know if we're quite sure that he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and what Steiner on Monday said was borderline Hall of Famer, and I guess I could kind of get on board with that. For me, it kind of opens up a question of what is a Hall of Famer, because if you base all pitchers on the same standards, very few relief pitchers, like really Mariano Rivera and maybe Hoyt Wilhelm, are the only Hall of Fame relief pitchers in baseball history deservingly. But, I mean, there are 8 or 10 other relief pitchers in the Hall of Fame, and so the precedent has kind of been set that that the standard for getting in as a reliever is lower, and I think that's okay. I go back and forth on this, but I think that's okay. It's like, you know, there's punters in the NFL Hall of Fame, even though no punter in NFL history, except maybe Sebastian Janikowski, could have ever possibly played any position other than punter, you know? And so I think I'm okay with the idea of a guy, okay, yeah, you're a failed starter. That's why you're a reliever, because you're not good enough to be a starter. Well, guess what? You know what? A lot of first basemen are first basemen because they weren't good enough to be pitchers at all, you know? And so I think I'm okay with a different standard for relief pitchers, but even by that, I feel like there's a lot of guys who would be ahead of Kenley in line, like Billy Wagner, for sure. Billy Wagner maybe should have got in before Trevor Hoffman. You know, I think Joe Nathan is ahead of Kenley Jansen. You know, Kent Tekulve, Dan Quisenberry, Francisco Rodriguez, John Franco, Jonathan Papelbon, a bunch of guys. I'm just reading down the WAR list, and so even if we're not, if we're lowering the threshold for career WAR, I mean, those guys all have like 70% higher career WAR than Kenley Jansen. When you get down to Jansen, you're like, guys around him are like, Armando Benitez has higher WAR than Kenley Jansen, LaTroy Hawkins. And so, you know, if Kenley can find his form and be an elite reliever for another 4 or 5 years, I'd consider it. But for me, even with the lower standards of relief pitchers, I'd have a hard time putting Kenley in the Hall of Fame He's been very, very good, but for me, it's hard to even squint enough to make him a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it's one of those where just based on the ones that are in the Hall of Fame, I mean, you go with Mariano and Trevor Hoffman, he's nowhere near them in terms of really anything. He's a three.
Yeah, they have twice as many saves as him. So even if you're going by his save number, yeah, it's not even close.
Yeah, the save number, the number of All-Star appearances, the... You look at Jansen's career, 12-year career, Mariano Rivera has 13 All-Star appearances. And then you go to Trevor Hoffman, he has 7 All-Star appearances, and he pitched for 18 years. So it's the matter of, yeah, Jansen at his peak was one of the best relievers at the time. I don't know if he was ever the best reliever at any time, which is kind of what a lot of people use as a sort of measuring stick for Hall of Fame. And it's one of those where, hey, he's a really good reliever, and that's, you know, there's no shame in that. There's he might get some Hall of Fame consideration, he might get some votes, he might last on the ballot longer than one time through, but at this particular moment, he's not a Hall of Famer, and it would take a real career rejuvenation here in these next few years to even make him really considered at all.
Yeah, and one of the other thoughts I had just as they were talking about Kenley, and you know, Monday and Steiner kind of hit it pretty hard that, you know, the fans have booed him at times, and they were really playing the you got to look at the big picture, and all of these contributed to this team in the last decade. And for me, like, it kind of drove home a point that maybe it's a little unfair to Dodgers stars the way that they are in a constant competitive cycle, because with a lot of players, you know, who play for the same team for a long time, you know, Cal Ripken Jr., won a World Series early in his career with the Orioles, and later on the Orioles were bad, you know, and so he was able to, like, even after his peak, when he was just kind of a not great player anymore, he could keep on playing, and they loved him because they were able to look at what he had done. But with the Dodgers, because we fans expect them to win every year, like, we can't just appreciate what Kenley's done the last 10 years. It's very much a what have you done for me lately kind of thing. And I don't necessarily think that's wrong. I just kind of think it's sad for the players, you know, even Clayton Kershaw. I mean, I think we're going to see that with Kershaw, assuming he re-signs with the Dodgers in the next couple of years. And maybe, you know, maybe because the role thing is different, you know, Kenley is still quote unquote the closer. And if Kershaw signs an extension for lesser money and it's kind of understood that he is not expected to be the ace, maybe, you know, he can be a serviceable fourth starter later in his career, and that'll be just fine, maybe. But with, I don't know, it seems sad for some of these stars that they don't get the chance to be appreciated for all they've done, because we are constantly, okay, we need to win today because we need to win this year, and we haven't had a bad team for these guys to get to be on.
Yeah, it's also kind of a point, similar point of, I believe if Jansen and Kershaw had been, you know, lights out in the postseason, or at least, you know, they won it last year. Jansen wasn't quite lights out. Kershaw had a pretty good postseason, but in the past, had they been lights out and led the Dodgers to a championship, I think maybe they get a little more string. But anytime, I mean, even you hear it now, anytime Jansen's about to blow a save or does blow a save, people start talking about 2017, and people start talking about 2018 and other years when he's kind of blown it in the playoffs. And then it all just gets lumped together, where instead of breaking it down individually, like if you break down individually, yeah, Jansen had those 2 blown saves right after the All-Star break, or 3 blown saves, whatever it was. But then he's been really good since then. He was really good right before then. But the next time Jansen comes in and there's 2 runners on in a 1-run game, you're just going to think about the 3 blown saves that he did have, which is not too much of a recency bias since it did happen, and he hasn't quite been lights out. He is a reliever that usually allows 1 base runner and makes it a little bit stressful. But yeah, I can see where that kind of plays in. It's kind of like, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, but towards his later years, the Lakers weren't competitive. He was able just to kind of go out and be the Kobe Bryant show for his last year, the farewell tour, and it ended with that 60-point game, and he got to go out. The Lakers didn't make the playoffs that year, but you can tell that to anybody who remembers that last game that he had. So it's kind of like that, where they're not going to probably really get that just because the Dodgers are always going to be competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of weird with Kenley, just because – I mean, he's been getting this treatment from fans for a few years, basically since 2017, because it was a bad combination because he was lights out in 2017 and then struggled in the postseason, and then 2018 was the first year he started to kind of struggle in the regular season. And so basically he's been having to live up to the own standard that he's set. But like, you know, you mentioned his last 12 games, he's allowed one run, one earned run. He has a 0.69 ERA. You know, he's only allowed 8 base runners in his last 13 innings pitched. And yet still, when he comes into a game, people are like, oh, he's going to blow it, you know? And it's like, I don't know what it is specifically about Kenley, but, you know, something about being the closer, I'm sure.
All right, we're going to come back and talk a little bit about the Mets and anything else from the weekend that we may have missed. So make sure to keep it locked on Dodgers. Did you know that Built Bar has a bunch of delicious flavors? There's something for everyone. And when you talk to a Built Bar fan like me or Jeff, we're definitely passionate about our favorites. Jeff is the grasshopper one, which isn't always available, but it's good. Mine was one of the ones that's not available. I think it was marshmallow cream puff, something like that. But there's a bunch of different flavors. They're always updating flavors, adding new flavors. Check out Built.com. See which one that tickles your fancy. Or get a mixed box and try them all and see which one ends up being your favorite. But Built Bars, they are great tasting. They're also healthy. You can check out on Built.com. Check out all the macros and see what you like about them and how they can help you out. And if you're trying to lose weight or whatever you're trying to do in your life. And Built Bar is also the official protein of the U.S. track and field team. So that's pretty cool. So go to Built.com right now. Use the promo code LOCK15 and you'll get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. It's that time of year again, and for Dodger fans, it's not just to head into the playoffs. Eyes are also starting to turn into football as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. And as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all pro and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests at BetOnline, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL survivor contest, both open now. Head to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device to sign up today and receive a welcome bonus. Also, make sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo where you can make a bet on the Thursday, September 9th season opener between the Buccaneers and the Cowboys. If you lose, your wager can be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using the promo code NFL100. From baseball, football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait and take advantage of all the great offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Jeff, last thing from the weekend. I talked about in the first segment. Dodgers only scored two home runs on Friday. They had no walks. Dave Roberts was seemingly a little bit upset about that they, you know, had, what, I think 12 strikeouts, no walks. They didn't have a great offensive game. Get shut out on Sunday after putting up 5 runs on Saturday. It's been a mixed bag for the offense for a little while now. They only scored 1 run in the first 14 innings the other night, or whatever it was, 13 innings before putting up runs and then having to put up more runs. They've struggled to kind of get anything going, really. They've put up 5 runs in a few games here and there, but it hasn't really been the prettiest. It's kind of been a little bit of a grind to put those runs on the board. And coming now into a stretch where they're going to play the Braves and then the Giants, is it at all concerning that offense seems to be slumping right now?
It's concerning. Slumps happen. Like, it's not concerning as in I'm worried that the Dodgers have forgotten how to hit. It's only concerning in that you never know how long these slumps are going to last. And hopefully they're going to break out of it soon. And it really could be, you know, because you can look and see, okay, Cody Bellinger has struggled all year, but Max Muncy has been slumping. Chris Taylor's been slumping. Justin Turner's been slumping. You know, Mookie Betts has been hurt and then hasn't really gotten it back yet since he came back. Even AJ Pollock has cooled off a lot since his July, you know. And so if even two of those guys I just mentioned start hitting closer to their potential, you know, throwing Corey Seager into that group, you know, he hasn't necessarily been lighting the world on fire. It's really a team-wide slump right now. Basically, Will Smith is the only hitter who's really hitting close to his potential right now, and Trey Turner. And so if a couple of those guys bounce back, this is easily a team that can start putting up 5 or 6 runs a game again. If they all bounce back, it's like, watch out world, you know? And so I'm sure that the bounce back will come. the worrisome part is not knowing when it's going to come, because I don't think there's really any rhyme or reason. I don't know if there's really even anything they can do to make it come sooner. It's just kind of the ebbs and flows of baseball.
Yeah, and it's obviously the worst time for this to kind of start happening. It's one of those where, like you said, it can happen at any time. The switch can happen. Max Muncy can start hitting. Chris Taylor can start hitting. I mean, Trey Turner's getting on base, getting left on base now, where a few weeks ago he was scoring every time he got on base in the first inning. Now he's not scoring, being left on base every time he gets on base in the first inning. And it's just a matter of, you know, they don't really have the power. They haven't really hit too many home runs. They haven't really been able to string together a few hits. Even the times they do get runners on base, one of the games in the Padres series, it was a couple sac flies that scored a couple extra runs, which is not a bad thing, but you know, it's a matter of, like Saturday, that they finally got the big hit late in the game. Will Smith hit the two-run single, and then AJ Pollock added on to it. But it's just a matter of, you know, they already, the lineup is deep and people keep talking about it, but it doesn't mean anything if they're not hitting. I think the other part, too, is just being smarter when they're at the plate and kind of realizing. I think everyone kind of needs to realize what's going on with them personally at the time. The one thing I forgot to mention earlier that we were going to talk about is, you know, Cody Bellinger is not right now. We know that. His swing is not there. It's not like a matter of he's getting beat by good pitches, but he's still able to crush mistakes like he's done in the past at other times when he's been struggling. He's not doing any of that. And you just kind of look, I look back at one of the earlier innings against John Gray on Saturday. Yeah, that's when John Gray pitched. And he's struggling there in the first inning. He has struggled with strikes. Cody Bellinger has 2-0, and then he swings, and it would have been ball three. And normally that's not a big deal. You know, guys are looking for a pitch, 2-0. But Cody Bellinger swinging, I don't know. You know, it's hard to give someone a 2-0 take sign, but I would think Cody to himself would be like, you know what? I'm not really hitting right now. My swing isn't right. Even if I do get the pitch I want, I don't think, you know, he might think he will do what he's supposed to do. But, you know, he's like, I might not do the damage that I think I'm going to do. You know, maybe be a little bit smarter, get another person on base, pass the baton. I think they're losing a little bit of the pass the baton. And then when they do pass the baton, the next person's not hitting.
Yeah, and I think it's easy as a big league hitter to press. You know, it's my 10-year-old son just played in his first Super League games the other day, and he struggled quite a bit, you know, and which is understood. He didn't get to play at all last year because of COVID, and so it was his first competitive games in, you know, well over a year against tougher competition, and he was really frustrated. And this is a 10-year-old. I can only imagine how frustrating it would be to be a former MVP whose livelihood depends on being a successful hitter. I get why you'd want to swing at that 2-0 pitch. Oh, I got this pitch, you know, and I actually didn't, I haven't seen that hit. I was driving home from picking up dinner for my family, so I was listening on the radio, and to hear Charlie Steiner say it was a line drive that was almost a 3-run double, and then I looked and it had a 180 expected batting average, so it was like it was a line drive, but it's not like it was realistically that close to being a hit, apparently. But yeah, I could see it both ways, because the way Bellinger is going to break out of this is to keep swinging at those pitches, and he's going to get his timing right eventually and, you know, get it figured out. And I've mentioned a few times the things that had been pop-ups or had been strikeouts then turned into pop-ups, and now they're, you know, more lazy fly balls more often. He actually hit one or two balls pretty hard on Sunday, and so it seems like he's getting there, and the way he's going to get there is by continuing to swing. But yeah, you're right. With bases loaded and a 2-0 count and the pitcher on the ropes, maybe that's a time to force yourself to be a little bit more patient and make John Gray throw more pitches and either earn yourself an RBI walk or, you know, get to a 3-1 count, and maybe then you get that pitch, you know, get the cookie that you can hit or something.
It's a matter they can break out this series and put up 7 runs every game, and that'll be fixed, but we'll see what happens. We'll finish up with a little bit of talk, not specifically about the Dodgers, about the Mets, and just, you know, the Mets are, it's fun to make fun of the Mets, but there's an interesting thing. So they had been doing, and I've seen tweets that they have been doing it for a while now, since kind of near the start of August, but I guess it just got asked about, I'm assuming. They've been doing a thumbs down celebration when they get a hit. And they asked Javi Baez about it. He said that it was kind of a way to get back at the fans who have booed him. And I think Lindor was part of it, who booed them and the Mets in general. And it's kind of a way to get back. Like, even when we're successful, We're throwing the booze back to you with the thumbs down. The Mets president, Sandy Alderson, released a statement basically being on the fan side, saying that the Mets will not tolerate any player gesture that is unprofessional in its meaning or is directed in a negative way toward our fans. I think we have slightly different thoughts on this, so I'll let you start on, you know, just kind of the whole situation.
This is such a New York thing. Like, holy crap. And it's not surprising that it's guys who haven't played in New York for very long. It was like the three names I saw were Baez and Lindor and Kevin Pillar. And, you know, it's guys who aren't longtime Mets. They're not necessarily totally used to playing in New York. And the Mets have been good most of this year. And so, you know, for Lindor and Pillar, they were part of a good Mets team earlier this year. Baez has basically only been there for the downfall of the Mets. But none of them, this is all their first experience with adversity in New York. And the fact is, New York fans and New York media handle things differently than most places. And, you know, maybe Francisco Lindor should have stuck around a little while before he signed that extension. If somebody had, you know, warned him that it can suck to play in New York sometimes. But yeah, you know, for me, I mostly agree with Alderson's statement, or at least understand why he had to make it. I think when you're getting paid a bunch of money as a professional athlete, you know, Baez was like, you know, well, they boo us, we're going to boo them. And the difference is they paid money to be there. You got paid money to be there. And so, yeah, well, you and I, we've talked plenty about this, that, you know, I would never boo my own team's players. And I, in my perfect world, nobody would. But the fact is, that is a right. You know, obviously the fans don't have the right to physically assault players or anything. But if we're talking about booing, that's the fans' right. They paid money to go to these games. They pay a lot of money to go to Citi Field. And the Mets have been really, really bad lately. And so for me, it is the fans' right, even if it's not what I would do. And Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor need to focus more on the fact that they're getting paid a crap load of money to be there. And I understand they're people, too. I totally get that. But the dynamic is different because the fans paid to be there and the players got paid to be there.
I don't feel the dynamic is different. I feel like their dynamic is that it doesn't have to be known. And I think that's what they've been doing. The first one I saw in a tweet right now was from August 6th, the first time they did it. It's August 29th now. They've been doing it for a while. It wasn't known. And now that it's known, then yeah, it's a little bit of a taboo thing where you shouldn't do that. But for me, if that was your thing and it's a clubhouse thing, I'm completely fine with it. That's like, if that's your little way of getting back at the boos, or, you know, trying to basically pit yourself against the fans, which isn't always a good thing. But hey, you know, sometimes it happens where, you know, New York fans are maybe a little bit different than some of the other fans. You know, Javi Baez is probably going to forever be loved in Chicago, even if he was on a 100-loss team and hitting .220. They're probably still going to cheer him regardless. And anywhere else you go, you're probably not going to hear the boos right away. But it's a matter for me where I didn't have an issue with it. But obviously now that it's in public, it's not the best look for them, especially since they haven't been good anyways when they start, since they started doing it. They had one of the worst months of August by any MLB team. So it's just a matter of, yeah, the fans can boo, the players can have the little, you know, Kenley feels fueled by the boos, I'm sure. And he's kind of alluded to that before, but he doesn't have a specific gesture for it. And if he did have a gesture that, you know, a new gesture after saves where he came up with it and no one had asked him about it. And then somehow somewhere down the line, it came out that, you know, that was my way of kind of, you know, saying like, don't boo me, or here's the boos right back at you kind of thing. I wouldn't be upset with it, but just now that it's out there, the fact that they've been bad and everyone just kind of piles on, it kind of ruined it for them. But like I said, they weren't winning anyway, so it's not like it was something that was fueling a comeback and like a major league style thing where they're ripping the stuff off the owner and trying to win all the games. It was just yeah, you're losing and you're doing this, so it doesn't look good.
Yeah, and like, I mean, the Dodgers have celebrations that I still don't think we know what the one means where they, like, put their hands down and then, like, kind of make the safe sign. I don't think we've ever, and we got the one tap in the head, and even that explanation, like, doesn't, like, we still don't know why they do it, you know. They kind of explain what it is, but, and so there's plenty of things you can do, and like you said, they've been doing this thing for 3 weeks, and just learn to shut your mouth, you know, and that's the big issue, because when you're publicly calling out your fans when you're the ones underperforming, that's the issue.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, I don't see Baez wanted to play with Lindor, and then he finally got to play with Lindor, but I don't think it's going to last longer than this next month.
Yep.
All right. You got anything else, Jeff, before you head out?
Two quick things. Aaron Baim, one of our listeners, he tweeted out, he said, I went to high school with Chris Bryant, so you can imagine my surprise when Jeff referred to Bryant as not young. I'm still not sure how I feel about that, so I wanted to apologize for being the one to break the news to Aaron Baim that he's not young anymore. Don't worry, Aaron, you're still young in human terms, just not in baseball player terms. And like I said, Bryant's not old, he's just not young. And Aaron, you are super young and handsome. And then on a more serious note, just wanted to give a quick thought. My buddy from high school, Ricky Mooney's, passed away from COVID the other night. And he was a huge Dodger fan. I've only seen him once since high school. And it happened to be, we happened to run into each other on the concourse at Dodger Stadium. And that was the only time I saw him in the last, however long, 26 years since we graduated high school. But a great guy, big Dodger fan. And so keep Ricky and his family, keep his family in your prayers. And, you know, COVID sucks, and I'm mad at it right now.
Yeah, sorry for that loss. And, yeah, we'll keep him in those prayers. That'll do it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening. Make sure to follow or subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. If you don't have a YouTube account, you might want to make one. We will be on YouTube here in the next coming weeks, hopefully by the end of the season. So you'll be able to see us and hear us. So that's that'll be exciting. We are on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Locked On Dodgers. Jeff is on Twitter at SnyDog. I'm at Vince Samperio. If you want to call and leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text, you can do so at 323-863-5625. Or you can send us an email, LockedOnDodgers@gmail.com. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us. When you get in your car or if you're at home, tell your smart device to play a podcast, Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Betting on baseball doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts.